I want to welcome you to the new Drag Champ Show. The three amigos are leading this show, none other than Jake Hodge, Mr. Hoodrich, Ryan Gleghorn, and Gary Don Free, Mr. Drag Champ himself. Now, I wouldn't ride to the store with these three yahoos, but you put them together for some good old stories, some racing news, some results from all over the world. Now, that's a party you just don't want to miss. So, let's tune in, let's hang on, and let's get it on. I want to welcome you to the Drag Champ Show.
With us this evening on the Drag Champ Show is the guy that brings you more home entertainment than like America's Funniest Home Videos ever thought about. If you're a drag racing fan, if you're a avid YouTube watcher, Mark Walter from Motor Mania TV and DragStory.com and J Angel Productions is, you know, more than just Motor Mania, but we've got Mark on the show this evening, and this is like a good listen if you like to learn about drag racing and, you know, how it's evolved. It's a guy that's seen it from every aspect. And Mark, how is Warner Robins, Georgia this evening?
Oh, it's nice, man. It's a little light rain shower, but we're home long enough to do the provision thing and I don't know, do Walmart and fill up with fuel and head out in the morning for Immokalee to do the winter warm-up down there this weekend.
Yeah, I've spent one evening in Warner Robins, Georgia. It's kind of a peaceful place. You wouldn't think somebody that's as busy as you guys live there, but we kind of make jokes about, you know, getting to be at the house because, you know, you guys travel a lot, and you drive a motorhome to the racetrack that has over 400,000 miles on it.
Yep.
And you've logged all of those pretty much.
The 875 from Indiana down is the only miles that we didn't put on it, so.
Yeah, why? Well, where did this start for you guys?
They came the Coachman factory up in Indiana, up north, you know, right there. I guess it's right on the Michigan line. Is where it came from. So, but they delivered, you know, they drive them down and deliver them to the dealers and everything. So 425,000 miles right now on it, with where, of course, we're on the second motor, second generator and everything. But yeah, the coach itself has that many miles on it.
So you and your wife, Joanne, are Air Force veterans. Yep. You guys both served together. Awesome. Thank you for that. I've told you that many a times. But how do you go from being a crewman on the biggest airplane that the military has ever had to shooting live drag racing? Like, I know there's a bunch of steps in between. Just take us through all of them.
Well, you know, having been involved in drag racing since, okay, this now it's time for the age deal, okay? 1974 was the first time that I ran a car down the racetrack. And I got involved because I watched the crash between Prudhomme and I can't think of the other guy's name. At the U.S. Nationals and Steve Evans, and it was just the coolest thing. And, you know, of course, the guy was fine, but it just really captured my interest. And I got involved then and raced a little bit. The bracket thing was just getting started. And then joined the military and didn't have a lot of time for it, and then got back into it in, 1984, I guess. Matter of fact, Joanne was pregnant with Matt, and we got back into it, and we were racing at the US 13 in Del Mar, and we were involved, and we went to Oklahoma and spent a bunch of years out there, and that's where I met my best friend. His name is Johnny West, not the one from Tulsa, but the one from Lawton, Oklahoma, and not the famed alcohol tuner, but met him and stayed with it and stayed involved with it, and then we ended up in Georgia, and I got involved with racing with the National Streetcar Association. When I won the championship in 2004 for the American Muscle class, which was an index class, and I got three lines in the magazine. Okay, I mean that's still when magazines were king back then. And, you know, of course, Pat Musey was the pro street champion, and he got like, you know, a half a page or whatever. And I told Joanne, I said, you know, I understand my place in the food chain. I said, but if the day ever comes where I can impact the sportsman racer, and give them the level of exposure that they really deserve. Because to me, the bracket racer, there are more of us than anything out there, and we truly are the backbone of the sport. We're the ones that support the ATIs, the FTIs, the JEGs, the Summits, the Eldebrocks, the Pro Systems, all of those different manufacturers out there in our realm. And so that was kind of on the horizon. I retired in 2004. We actually, it's no giant secret that we do motorsports ministry. I've done chapel services. We do a Sunday morning thing every Sunday. And we got involved with a guy by the name of Jimmy Biggs. And he came to me, and now streaming in 2005 was, it was a brand new thing. It was a new technology. YouTube was, minuscule in comparison to what it is now, as long as just video on demand. And he came to me and he says, "Hey, I'm thinking about doing this video thing. What do you think?" And I said, I know my church is getting ready to stream. I said, I can go back and, pick the brains to the tech guys at church. And so that's what I did. And that's how it started, using these big old clunky VHS, actual, no kidding, TV cameras that, you'd see guys out there using to report, the news and what have you. Coax cable, in comparison to the stuff we use now, the mixer was just, kind of nothing that would you consider state of the art. And we just started doing it. And
with all due respect, I probably would not work a starting line camera for you then.
No, nobody wanted to tote that thing around, trust me, okay? And we actually used one of those for a while with our program, and then finally got rid of it because it was a tank, okay? Just imagine toting that dude around. It was like 8 or 9 pounds, which doesn't sound like a lot until you've had it on your shoulder for 4 or 5 hours. And it's just, yeah. But so that's how it started. And there was, the cell system was, we're talking, what was it, CDMA back then, a little bit better than dial-up. And so we couldn't use that. Was not a lot of internet available, most tracks. So we went satellite. And that's how the whole thing started. And we did an initial point, set it up on a tripod and point and do all of that with when you got to the track. And then we would stream, and it was in, I'm trying to think the resolution. We're in 1280 by 720 now, and I think
had dial-up together.
Well, yeah, and that's the other thing too, is that a lot of people just had dial-up. So, some of them would take it and put it on a long buffer so they could watch it. But it would allow it to kind of stack into their computer to where they could watch it. But it was, the resolution was, it was like 360 by 240. It was 4x3. It's, if you look at what we're looking at on the Zoom here, in the four picture layout, that's about the size of the video back then. So, and the guys are talking about, watching it in their basement on their laptop, and it was grainy. It was, in comparison, it was the stone age, of streaming. But that's where it started. And we worked together, Jimmy and I worked together for about 2 years, and we were so far ahead of our time. Financially, it was, nobody trusted the technology because it was so new. And it was one of those things where people, they just weren't ready for it. And advertisers were, of course, again, magazines were still king back then. So people were doing print publications for advertising. And even NHRA still struggles to get advertising on TV. So to get it on streaming back then was almost impossible. So in 2007, Jimmy went back to TV. That's where he came from. And I went to school. I had the old GI Bill. And so I went to the local Votech, and I took every technical course dealing with computers I could take. And I ended up coming out of there with one degree. I was headed to do three, and the last two classes just didn't come together for me because I was doing most of the stuff, was distance learning. So In 2009 is when things really started moving forward. I had done some work with James Lawrence, with his publications, and we got this idea to start Drag Story. And nobody was really, I mean, people were shooting pictures. I mean, you go out and you see Roger Richards and all the guys shooting pictures and everything, but we would go out and shoot a lot of pictures. I mean, and we kind of told the story through pictures of what happened. Joanne was doing, well, see, we were doing the ADRL, and Joanne was doing the juniors and the Pro Extreme Motorcycle. Yeah, Pro Extreme Motorcycle. And then I was kind of doing the cars and doing a little writing, not a lot, but we told the story through the pictures, and it was like a big hit, and we were doing things. I mean, you're taking pictures from cars from the behind and different angles, because it seemed like every picture you saw was either in the winner's circle with, you know, the whole crew around it, or the world famous, you know, 3/4, 2/3 shot from the, you know, the right front or the left front, with the car launching or doing a burnout. And we started doing things where we were taking pictures of cars from behind and just doing different things because it was boring, you know, and people liked it, and they were like, and doing pictures of people, you know, that was the one thing that I realized in our sport is that we made the car the star instead of making the people the star. And I think that's one of the things that we've gotten better at. Okay. And even the folks, I mean, you know, Brian Lones and I talked about this at the SFG race up in Martin this year. And he goes, oh, no, absolutely. He goes, you know, we were terrible about that. And they're a lot better now about, you know, making the drivers and the crew members and letting people be aware of, yes, this top fuel car runs, you know, X fast or funny car or pro stock, but the people behind it, the people driving, you know, and all of that is what's really the key. And that was one of the things that NASCAR did. You know, the car was a tool. It was an advertising tool. It was a performance tool. But the driver, I mean, you think about Earnhardt and Waltrip and the Allisons and all of those guys from the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and the name that they made and they gave to NASCAR. So we kind of started to focus on that stuff, to where we could make the drivers known. Now, it's tough in a bracket race, okay, because you've got 500 cars, 400 cars, you know, constantly going down the track. And it's certainly difficult to do, interject any stuff. And we're doing a little bit more of that. And some other folks are doing stuff with that too, but that's kind of how it all started. And you know, it really took off in 2009. We got involved with the ADRL doing audio only. In 2010, we were doing the audio, and New Wave Productions was doing the ADRL TV show for MAV, and I went to Kenny and Nowling and Jeff Fortune, and I said, why don't you just hand us the video feed and we'll put it up on the internet? Because we were using Ustream at the time, and they're like, and Kenny was, it took a little convincing, but we finally convinced him to do it. And in June of 2010 at Martin, we did the first live, no kidding, broadcast of a drag race in the, what do we call, the modern era, I guess. And it's taken off from then. So we worked with them that year. And then in 2011, we worked with the NMRA and the NMCA, and Donald Long was involved in some of that there, along through that. And then 2012 is when things with Motor Mania, you know, really kind of took off and started to grow and become what it's become today. And so that's kind of the genealogy, I guess, of how things transpired over the last 10, 12 years.
When it started in 2010 at the ADRL race, did you think then that bracket races would be your primary source of income at that point?
Because no, I really didn't, okay? And that was one of the things, I mean, there you know, when you think about what was the big money bracket races back then, okay, it was the million. You know, Moroso was already gone. Okay. I mean, you know, and there was the triple tens, the guys out of Hattiesburg had done that. You know, there really wasn't much of anything. And it's really interesting to watch how our business has transformed from the heads up world, which seemed to be all the rage, into the bracket stuff. And our viewership on the bracket stuff is phenomenal at this point. I mean, I don't think we could be any happier with it. When you figure the average bracket race we see, we stream has 15 to 20,000 views a day. So, yeah.
I didn't know the drag story was you started back that late. Yep. And that's a picture y'all took of me at the ADRL World Finals in 2009.
That Joanne, I guarantee you, Joanne took that picture.
It shows that she posted it for sure.
Yep.
Yeah, that's cool.
How small world, huh?
Oh yeah, I had no idea. That's cool. I didn't even know that picture existed.
Wow. Yep. Yeah, that's we awesome. Did. Drag Story's been around since 2009, so it's what is it? Year 11 or 12 or something. It depends on how you count it. So, and we're still doing stuff over there. I mean, we get. We get most of the press releases from all the big teams, and of course anything that anybody will send us, you know, that's, you know, got some level of, you know, can read it and make sense out of it, and it's got a couple of pictures with it, we'll put it up. I mean, this has been a weird year because of the COVID thing, but normally we I think I have 12 or 13,000 press releases up on Drag Story right now. And I don't know how many pictures. There's 10, 12, 15,000 pictures up on Drag Story from all the years. So, and they're all still there. So we managed to keep the software up and running and current. And thanks to we have a great host down in, I don't know. It used to be at the Planet in Houston. I don't know if it's still there or not, but we've been with those guys for quite a while down there for both Drag Story and Motor Mania TV. So, yeah.
I thoroughly enjoy you talking about your military days because you had like a really cool job, but at the same time, like you were flying in something that probably shouldn't have been in the air. I always say it's wrong. It was a C5. I was going to say C5, and then I know there's a C-130. I know there's one of the two.
Yeah. No, C5. Now, 130 is a little thing. So.
Yeah, I knew I wasn't allowed to say that wrong.
But, I mean, in comparison to a C5, I mean, a C5, you can put 6 Greyhound buses in. So that gives you kind of a perspective of how big it is. And, I got to do some pretty cool stuff. I mean, you know, I got to go to Moscow. I've been to Africa. I never got to Australia. I always wanted to go there, but I never got to Australia. Been all over the world and of course in the Middle East, and we did a lot of work in the Middle East, but yeah.
What's the difference today? You talked about how hard it was and the equipment when you first started streaming. How easy is it today, or are there different challenges today?
The biggest challenges today are people, and Jake knows what I'm talking about, and so does Ryan, because they both worked with us.
What?
Not that you're a challenge.
Yeah, but you know, people that want to do this. This is not an easy job, okay? I mean, it's long hours. It's, you know, it's hot, it's cold, you know, you're hungry. I mean, it's all of those things.
Unless you're Ryan.
Yeah.
It's a good thing that you guys aren't close together, so, you know, anyway.
It's okay.
But the and then technology-wise, we're all fiber optic now. I mean, we still have some cabling that we utilize, but you know, fiber optic, you can't beat the quality. And we've got some cool things on tap. I mean, and if Jake wants to talk about that, I'll let him talk about that. But we've got some things on tap for some wireless stuff next year. We just picked up a couple of systems that are going to allow us to do some pretty cool stuff. But the biggest thing, quite honestly, on the technology side is a little piece of dirt will take out the video signal. And so sometimes you chase this stuff. It's like you can be at Huntsville and you can put everything out and everything's fine and it works great. And you pack it all up and you go down to Immokalee and you just can't get a camera to work, you know, because there's trash in the system somewhere or something got damaged. And so that's technology-wise, the quality, the type of gear we use is, you know, far superior to what we used 10 years ago. But there is a level of fragility, I guess is the best way to put it, when we look at that. And there's a life cycle thing too. I mean, it's the electronics, guys. I mean, you know, you don't have a TV that lasts for 40 years. And that's no different in the stuff that we use. And we're in the middle of a life cycle changeover. We bought all new cameras last year. This year, we're in the process of replacing the converters that take, you know, the fiber, the video, and change it into the light that goes through the fiber and then gets, you know, changed back into video in the motor home. And we've now replaced three of those, and we use five. So that's one thing. And then we're getting ready to buy a new mixer because the one that we have used has done well. And, you know, this stuff, it runs for hours. You know, when you go in to do the average race and it's 3 days, this equipment will run for somewhere between 36 and 50 hours, depending on how long the day is. And so it just wears out. And so that's one of the other big challenges.
Tell them about the critter.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're having a problem with one of the cameras on the start line, because the start line, we use the one that goes across the start line, and you guys see that on almost every event that we do. And then the other converter in that box runs the wireless camera that we use on the start line. We use it for the winner's circle and different things. And it was having a problem. And, I finally swapped the converter out and it fixed it. And so I'm like, okay. And I got time the next day or something. And so I take this thing apart. And it's, hang on a second. They're not junk. These are billet, aluminum, you know, circuit boards, the whole nine yards, right? And I take it apart. And inside there, something had crawled in it and died and shorted across part of the circuit board. I mean, that's just the stuff that you deal with, okay? At SFG and South Georgia. I go down to put the cameras out one day, the mid-track cameras, which is 2 and 4, and I open the box, and it's full of fire ants. It's just the things that you deal with in this business. So, you know, you go and you get the bug spray, and you kill the fire ants, and you spray the ground, and hopefully they don't come back. But that's the kind of stuff. I mean, it's crazy stuff like that. I mean, it's insane, but yes.
So dust and critters.
Yep. Critters.
As far as the new technology that you alluded to, all we'll say about that is stay tuned to Drag Champ, because there's probably going to be a really cool article that comes out on top of that. Also, one of my favorite things, I think the last race I announced you guys were at, I don't even know where I was even at, Memphis maybe? Yeah. It was people complaining about why that the camera was not on during reentry round. Why we were not having a swinging camera during reentry round. Because the guy in the scaffold is human. He needs to use the bathroom. He needs to eat. You know, he needs to, you know, not go insane. And people don't realize that a lot of these events, it's literally you and Joanne. Yep. And that's it. We don't bring in another camera guy. Not that, you know, you don't want to, but for a promoter, if they don't want to spend it's not cheap to stream a race. It's not cheap because not only it's less expensive, but it's not cheap. Not only is it, you know, a thing that you're going to charge somebody for, but whenever you bring a whole other human being, and that's another, you know, X amount of dollars, and you're already like, wow, this is all still quite a bit of money. But if you had another guy, yes, it would make sense maybe, but you still need that break. You still have to maintenance everything you've got. You've got to eat. You've got to get around, and that's when Joanne goes and takes pictures for Drag Story.
Yep.
You know, I know that you care a whole lot about it, and I know it just irks you just to see somebody like, not that they just don't understand what it's actually like to be in the scaffold. I don't understand either because I'm not any good at it. But you guys have to take a break.
Yeah, and that's the thing is that, you know, a lot of people don't understand that it is 9 times out of 10. I mean, most of the events we go to, it's Joanne and myself. And, you know, we're fortunate the technology that we use, especially in the production end, what Joanne does in the motorhome, The software that we use is very powerful. It allows us to do a lot of things, you know, running video pieces and commercials and, you know, the lower thirds and all of those things that, as a matter of fact, she's working on the show for, oh, that's actually Matthew's car. Yeah. You know, Matt did this giant wheelie and he mashed the car pretty bad. So didn't crash it, but it came down and bent the firewall and it was bad. So
for those of you that don't know, Matt is Mark's son that has a third gen Camaro that is very fast, LSX powered with a stick.
And
a mullet.
Yeah, it's been 930s. It's all naturally aspirated. It's got a G-Force 5-speed in it, and it's pretty badass. It's got a Black Magic clutch in it and everything, so with Tinsy and Aaron. But, yeah, so, you know, I mean, that's, yeah. She's working away on the show for this weekend, as a matter of fact, doing the lower thirds and getting all that stuff prepped. But, yeah, it's the two of us, and that's because economically it's about the only way we can do it. When you look at what we charge, and I won't get into the whole price structure thing, but when you look at what we charge, the amount of days that we will do at an event, if you were to bring in a regular, you know, no kidding, TV production company, it would cost, you know, somewhere between $2,000 and $3,000 just to get the production vehicle there and maybe a technician that would go with it. And then you got to bring the camera people in and the producers and all that stuff. So you're looking, you know, probably $3,000 to $4,000 a day. And we're well under that. So, but it's, there is a passion about this. And the passion has to do with the individuals, the racers. And it goes back to what we talked about earlier, where the bracket racers are the guys that I absolutely believe are the backbone of the sport. And, you know, I'm not saying that we don't need Top Fuel or, you know, Pro Stock or any of those other folks. We certainly do, okay? But as far as the guys that help keep the industry alive, I believe it's the bracket racers.
I couldn't agree more. And I think if it wasn't for y'all's service, we'd still be an afterthought. We'd be a back page in the National Drags that I don't even think anyone reads anymore.
I don't. I get it online. I figured, let's don't kill trees for me to get something I'm not going to watch or read. So, sorry. I mean, I'm an NHRA member, but, you know, that's the reality is I don't have time, but. I think this is a symbiote. You know, this is a relationship between the bracket racers, the promoters, the tracks, and us. And I think that it's very symbiotic, and we've worked very well together. And I think that has helped promote the sport. Okay, when you see Jegs and Summit and FTI and ATI and Wiseco and all of these other big names that for the longest time were not really involved in you know, the big money bracket racing, and now they are, okay? And I think that that speaks to all of us, okay? I'm not willing to sit here and, you know, pat myself on the back and say that, you know, Mark Walter and Motor Mania TV and Joanne Walter were the ones that made it happen. We didn't, okay? But we all worked together. And I think that's important that everybody understands that. We understand that, okay? And, you know, because our customer is the person that's sitting at, you know, at their desk, you know, maybe at work, watching it on their computer, or the wife or the husband or the kids or grandma and grandpa or Uncle Billy or Aunt Joe or whoever, you know, is watching it on their Roku. They're watching their son or their grandson, you know, Nick Hastings, Joanne, his grandma, and he gets embarrassed. And I love when I talk about this stuff, but he gets embarrassed because, man, I'm so sorry. I said, don't be apologetic about that. Your grandma loves you, you know, she loves watching you race and everything else. And so that's the thing is that the families are involved. Okay. And I think that's really, really important. And yes, there is a larger fan base, and even the heads up guys. I mean, we've got some of the our viewers from the early days when we were doing a lot of heads up stuff. They're now fans of bracket racing, where, you know, before there was such a great disdain for that.
And Clay Milliken.
Yeah, and Clay Milliken. I mean, you know, of course, Jake was at the Guaranteed Million with that whole deal, and Clay did a great job. You guys did a great job. We were very, very happy with how that production went. Probably, all said and done, it was probably one of the best that we had ever done. So,
if not,
I agree with that. It was really cool to watch the behind the scenes.
Yeah,
I've raced at 4 or 5 different racetracks since then, and like I bet there's probably 10 people at each track that come up. Well, we couldn't believe how good that was. That was so good. Even on Saturday, there was no racing. We couldn't just turn it off. I couldn't feel my legs. I went to Mark at one point. I was like, we have got to take a break. Just give us a break for a minute.
Yeah, because you and I were up there standing the whole time, and it was like, you know, at least I could sit down on the desk there for a while and chill out. But yeah, no, that went, you know, we had 1,000 people watching that. I mean, that was a talking heads thing, talking about bracket racing. But, you know, the thing that was cool about that was the folks and the Cummings and you know, it's kind of that old school, the guys that you know, kind of helped create bracket racing through the program at Byron and everything else. And having those guys in there. And then you look at some of the other people. Nunez. Okay. Here's a guy, you know, comes to, you know, he's from Puerto Rico, comes to the United States and, you know, creates what he does with Fuel Tech. The guy from Weld immigrates to the United States, couldn't speak English. All right.
He's from Weld. He watched
English on the first. It's a Bel Air. Yeah. You know, and it's like, and here's a guy and he's involved in the sport. You know, it's the quintessential American success story of people that you know come from another part of the world and succeed in business in our country. And you know, it's those are the types of success stories. And that was the thing that was so cool about what we did at Memphis. We really enjoyed that.
And the cool part was we had no agenda. And there's 0% of it scripted. It's like, here's this man you've never met, make a conversation with, and you're like, and it can't sound like the last one. Okay, let's do this.
Yeah.
Sounds like a Drag Champ show every week.
Yeah. Yeah. Mike Boner. Who's Mike Boner?
Division 7 champ, back to back. Las Vegas Nationals winner.
So, Mark, it's not always been a great story for you. Like, you were at a point in life at one time that, you know, you've very publicly said that your marriage was coming to an end and you were to a point where you were drinking and you were doing a whole lot of stuff. So here you tell that story not only at a, you know, a Sunday morning chapel service at the racetrack, but as a man-to-man story. We've had a lot of those talks. That's in its own, like, to get from there to being in the same woman in a motorhome all over the country now is pretty wild to think about.
Well, I don't know. Because Joanne and I are together, I mean, we've been married 43 years now there. 43. And 1977, okay? And we were together for, you know, a year or so before that. But, you know, being together, you know, and doing this together. And, you know, she was not a drag racing fan, okay? And she kind of is now. But, you know, as she put it, I was a Mark Walter fan. And so, you know, getting to do that with her. And don't get me wrong, sometimes the motorhome gets real small, all right? But for the most part, we get along really well, all right? Now, this has been a crazy year, and so we don't try to judge anything based on this year just because of the pandemic. But, you know, we enjoy it. We enjoy being together. And, you know, there are days when I crawl up in that scaffold, and this is, you know, week 8. And, you know, I think we had one where we actually – between traveling and streaming, we didn't have a day off. I don't know, it was 40 or 50 days this year.
So it's like day 3 of Drag Week.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Bring out the butthurt cream, okay?
We still have
that, by the way, yes. And, you know, so, but, you know, it's you're just tired. And, you know, and especially like when we do Drag Week, all right, and let me explain that and people will have a better understanding. You move from track to track, okay? Well, for the guys and the gals involved in the competition, you know, they're driving their cars and some of them are pretty exotic and they can, you know, they tear them up and, you know, just because that weren't really meant to be driven on the street. For us as a production company, we go in, and I'll just use last year when we did we went VMP, Cecil County, ATCO, Maryland International Raceway, and back to VMP. So we get there, we get everything set up on the first day. We get finished at 4 o'clock. Actually, we didn't get finished until 6 because it rained. Tore down, got in, and of course, now we're driving from VMP. We got to go through DC, up to Baltimore, through Baltimore to the north side to Cecil County. I think, what time did we finally go to sleep? Was it 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning?
2:45.
Yeah, and we were live at 8 o'clock. And that was
the stream was live.
That was the first day, okay? And, you know, I mean, of course, driving anything in the Northeast is not easy, okay? And because of the traffic and everything else. And that was, I mean, that's what we did each day. And it was difficult. And, you know, you just want to, by the time you get, when you finally get to the end, it's such a relief that that last day when you finally say, we're done, okay? And Freiberger signs off and, you know, you're like, okay, guys, you know, go ahead and let's get tore down and put stuff up. And I think we went to Giuseppe's and ate.
That was such an exhausting week. I stayed at BNP and raced the next day and then drove to Bristol.
Yeah, I remember. Because we went to Bristol after that too, didn't we?
Yeah,
we went to Wolfling, that's right.
So we spent 2 weeks together.
Yep.
But no, you know, drag week, people don't understand. J Angel is the umbrella company that has Motor Mania, and you guys do a lot of different streams for a few different organizations that people really don't realize, which we won't really get into that. We can tell a difference. You know, if you're like, wow, this stream's a lot better than the last time I watched, it's probably because it is. But Drag Week, Ryan has a video of us. I don't want to get off the couch. I just paid the toll through the back window in the motorhome. Nick drove past.
Yeah, he was handing it out the window of the motorhome from the couch. So
yeah, I was not getting up.
It was great. That was probably one of the most fun weeks of my life.
We give Ryan a hard time, but Ryan had the job of the century. Ryan had the job of, hey, Ryan, my radio battery's low. I need another one. Hey, Ryan, hey, come down here. You know, it's time to deliver lunches. And Ryan had to go right back into the motorhome and sit in the air conditioning because, for those of you who don't know, Drag Week is like the second week in September, and it's normally in the south.
Yep.
That's a good
time. And it was hotter than hot, so... Yes.
It was hotter than hot.
It was fun, though. I did get, like, the easiest job out of all that you could have had. But, no, I had a good time. Hopefully we get to do it again.
Well, we're supposed to. I'm not sure what the tracks. I've already talked to the guys at Motor Trend, and, you know, we're supposed to be on tap to do that again this year. And they actually made the Roadkill Nights, if that happens, they've talked to us about coming and doing that. So but that's a one-day deal. And that's kind of cool. I really would like to do that. Hopefully we can kind of jam it into the schedule and make it work. So, but yeah.
What is your, I know that you do Yellow Bullet every year. What is your favorite event to stream? The one that you circle on the calendar to go and you look forward to going to it?
Oh boy.
I would answer this wisely. I'm just saying. I can terminate this call real fast.
It's the working man's tango.
Yeah, there you go.
Joanne's got your back.
There you
Jake.
Go. There you go. In all seriousness, I mean, you know, probably there's a history with Monty and I, okay? It literally goes back 20 years. And at times it was very adversarial. We have streamed every one of his events. Jack did it a few times. And we've done it the rest of the time. And so from a heads-up perspective, that's probably my favorite. The brackets, it really depends. I mean, to me, when I get up in the scaffold and I'm just in a zone up there, okay, and I spend a lot of time thinking about stuff, you know, because, I mean, let's face it, you know, the repetition, it's almost muscle memory, and, you know, it's almost, in some senses, it's almost like, you know, releasing the button, and, you know.
Not true. It's not true. That's right.
Well, yeah, but that's because you've never spent enough time up there where it was just, you know, and anyways, but the, From the bracket end of it, I don't know. You know, there's so many great events. We love Jake's event. The flings are good. You know, Jed's race is good. I mean, I don't know that there's one that I necessarily like better than the other, because they all have a unique personality. And then, you know, we get to do some new ones. I mean, this year we did West May's race, and let's see, we did the Derby City 100K. And next year we're going to go. Matter of fact, we just locked in a deal to go to Canada to do a race up at Grand Bend. The Beaver Big
Bucks?
Yes, up at Grand Bend for Mike Verstel. And we're going to do the – now, yeah, Tyler and Brian just – they just released the information on what they're going to do at Gateway with the Stock Superstock deal. And we'll be doing that. So, you know, as a matter of fact, there may be two of the West May races at Muncie. So, you know, I don't know. I enjoy that because the people, those are my people. Those are the people that, you know, when I race, well, I don't get to race anymore. But when I raced, I mean, those are the same people that I raced with in the sense of they're bracket racers or they're index racers or they're class racers that are running brackets. And those are the same type of people I raced with when I was running the National Streetcar Association, when I was running brackets at the home track, whether it was here in Georgia or Delaware or Oklahoma. And, you know, so it, to me, it's just enjoyable. You know, it's miserable when it's raining. Okay. I don't care. There's no place worse to be in the world, even if you're in a motorhome, than to be at a racetrack in the rain, okay? That's the long and the short of it. It's certainly better in a motorhome than it is to be in a trailer, which I've done for a lot of years too. But, you know, but they all, I don't know. I can't, it's like trying to pick a favorite kid, you know? I mean, it's just not something that you can do.
Is there any plans to do more of the behind-the-scenes interviews like y'all did at the Guaranteed Million?
We would like to. We have to have another person to do that.
I know somebody works cheap. His name's Gleghorn.
You know, I mean, that's the thing, is that we have to have another person. The editing end of that is not hard, all right? And matter of fact, Jake and Clay did that. That was part of what Jake did for at the Guaranteed Million. And we're, you know, I don't care who does the interviews. Bring them to us to where we can put them in the show. Matter of fact, Kyle, I'm not sure who exactly did the interviews down at the SFG race, but we saw them on Facebook and we're like, dude, we could have shown the world that stuff. You know, it's like, I understand you want to, you know, put it on Facebook and all that, but you know, if we got people that want to do that at an event and say, here, you know, here it is, you know, all you got to do is play it. But because to edit that stuff, it's really pretty straightforward. There's not a lot of fancy in that. You do the interview, you kind of whack the front and the back off of it, maybe throw a bumper on it, and you play it. And you know, it's you don't it doesn't have to be fancy. But yeah, we would love to do more of that. But again, for us to just to bring another body in, it's like Jake said, it's $1,500, okay, to bring a person in for 3 days. By the time you pay them, put them in a hotel. If they can drive, it's a bonus. But if they've got to fly, they need a rental. I mean, you know, it's just people cost money. That's the long and short.
The third annual Working Man's 10 Grants, we'll have to have an extra person there for the new exciting thing we're talking about. So we will have those there.
Yep.
Well, hey, I've been getting practice on this. I've been taking my gimbal and my phone and doing some lives from the starting line and stuff at some of the races. And I wish it would be tied into the live feed because I think that's a cool view at times. But I couldn't do that all day. I don't know how you and Joanne can sit there and work as long as y'all do, because just being on the start line for like 30 minutes for a live feed and back and forth in the heat and all this, I'm like worn out. Yeah. So it does take a lot of work.
So like on the starting line thing, there's just certain cool things like on each, like each car is different, and it's like you got to just find it and be able to somehow get it, like a picture of it inside the car with no glare on it.
Yeah.
Really hard, but it's also really cool.
Yeah.
It's like a challenge. It's kind of like sitting down and writing an article. I could not sit down and write an article if you paid me to do it. It's not, I got paid somebody to write my senior English paper so I could graduate high school. That is a true statement.
That's so funny.
Oh my goodness.
But now at the one of the CP's races in Dallas, I literally almost went inside the car with Scooter Hamblin. He had the window down and in his wagon as he pulled up on the start line, and I'm sticking the camera in, and about the time I get almost into the car with him, he rolls the window up and stages. And I told him when he got back, I said, dude, if you left that window down a few more seconds, you'd have probably had my phone with you going down the track. So, but it was a cool view.
That's actually my wagon now. I'm not sure if you guys knew that or not.
Oh, is that your wagon now? You traded the S-Dime?
No, I didn't. I had no choice. I'd take the wagon over.
Well, no offense, but I like that wagon. So the little red truck fits you pretty well, except when your stripe taker messed you up a few times. But other than that.
That brings back another memory. Mark Walther is actually in Texas Drag Racing Hall of Fame for some sort.
My goodness.
The first time I've ever went to the Texas Motorplex, he's like, hey, go look at those bricks. I'm like, why? He said, just go look at them. Mark Walther's name is on the bricks at the Texas Motorplex.
Won a national event, didn't you?
Yep, 1988, Chief Nationals. That's when Billy Myers owned IHRA, and
Eddie Hill won.
Yeah, Eddie Hill won Top Fuel. I think Ed McCullough won Funny Car, and I don't remember who else. But I mean, we won the 1290 class, and my buddy Daryl Modesto won
he won Supercomp.
Supercomp, I think.
He won 890 because he won the Super Comp or Quick Rug, whatever they called it back then.
Yep.
World title.
Yep.
Fun fact, you want to know who finished second?
Your dad.
My grandpa.
Oh, your grandpa. Okay.
And that roadster.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. He just dated
us. Yeah, I know. We're old. We're ancient.
Hey, I was there when they opened the Motorplex, the first race at it. Hey, I had the shirt for years.
Yeah.
We were at the very first bracket finals. And because we had been stationed in Delaware. We got stationed in Oklahoma in 86. And we went to the very, because they, you know, had just closed Green Valley, and you know, the guys up there in Lawton were telling me about all the great stories of, you know, going to the bracket finals of Green Valley. And I'm like, wow, that sounds pretty spectacular. You know, but the Motorplex, and then, wow, I mean, you know.
With still, the crickets and the skunks.
Yeah, the crickets and the skunks, okay. I don't know if you've ever seen all of that, but the crickets were pretty insane down there. So
we got bugs in Texas.
True state.
Lots of them.
Yeah.
What's next? I mean, is this what you guys want to retire doing?
What's next? That's a good question. I don't know. You know, I mean, I think that as long as the world doesn't implode on itself, this deal is going to be around for a while. We are in the process of putting the second unit back on the road. Matter of fact, Denny Pett drove down from Tennessee this past weekend, and we talked. And he is definitely very interested. It'd be a part-time gig. I mean, you know, it's not something like that. But of course, we've got Tony with MMTV3, so we've put MMTV2 back on the road, and. That will help because we have four events right now that we do not have a team for, and that's just on Motor Mania TV. But I don't know. You know, I don't – this was not on the radar scope, guys, when it started 15 years ago. I'll be very blatantly honest with you, okay, is that when I retired from the military and we bought the motorhome and we went out on the road full-time in motorsports ministry – I was the chaplain for the National Streetcar Association and subsequently got involved doing the DRR series, and we were doing other things at churches and what have you. And this came along, and it just, I mean, we literally were in the process of pioneering a church in upstate New York. Joanne's family is from upstate, and we'd had a meeting with her sister and her brother-in-law and their kids and some other folks, and we were praying moving forward on doing that. We're going to sell everything down here in Georgia and go up there and you know, do something a little bit different than what they're used to in that area. And we were praying, and all of a sudden the phone started ringing, and this is how Motor Mania happened, okay? So it's truly a God thing. And I don't know, you know, when it's going to end or what have you. We're just, you know, we take each year as it comes. And, you know, where we are now in comparison to where we were 10 years ago, this thing is night and day difference. We know that there is a lot of opportunity out there for exposure for people. And we've got the gear. If we can find the people, you know, and folks want to support this, which they have for years now, then it'll keep going. You know, at one point we actually did, I think we actually did 72 events one year, back when IHRA was still, you know, they were still doing national events and division races and all of that. And then we were doing a lot.
It's only 52 weeks.
Huh?
There's only 52 weeks.
I know. Well, that's when you have three teams on the road. You know, you put three teams on the road and you do that three times a month. There's nine events. And, yeah, if you go back and look at the results on Drag Story, which is where we put most of the time, we put them up unless they're not available. But you go back and you look at, we did all of the IHRA division races. We did all of the IHRA national events. And then we did several big bracket races. We were doing the PDRA, the ADRL, Ducks races, Yellow Bullet. And you know, again, we were doing just a huge, huge number of events. We're back at 44 for next year with a third team. And once we gel that team and you know, everything is working, I suspect that the phone will continue to ring. So I don't see an end, guys. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, we're 65, okay? And we do pretty good for our age. But in the same token, at some point, you know, we set up and tear down scaffold. You know, we're not physically going to be able to do that. And but we don't know when that's going to happen. And we're just going to continue to do what we're doing to gain exposure for the sport, for the racers, for the promoters, for the tracks. And when it's supposed to be over, the good Lord will make that abundantly clear to us. And, you know, it may be where we go do two or three events a year and we have teams out doing the rest of them and we kind of stay home and make sure that all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed and the contracts are written and folks are taken care of.
All right, did you hear what he said? He said, we're 65 and we do pretty good for our age. He can kick both of our asses at the same time.
Easily.
I don't think so. Maybe with a baseball bat, but you know. I mean, yeah.
That's an old are you giving us the bat?
You understand that, right? I mean, we don't fight fair. Dude, I mean, if I fought,
are you giving us the bat?
Bones, okay. It's like, you know, it's like pick up a trash can.
The only reason we could tear down it at Drag Week and put back up so fast is because we were getting embarrassed.
No,
Mark's already done this and gone. Like, we're still standing here. Yeah, like, wow, Mark's already done with this. We're way too slow with this. We could probably hurry up.
Yeah,
that sounds like he's done it a time or two,
once or twice.
Mark, I just want to say thanks to what you do. I mean, you and Joanne, the passion that you talked about earlier, I mean, you obviously have that for the sport to do what you guys do and stay on the road that much. And, I mean, to be at these tracks at 8 a.m. and rolling all the way till 3 and 4 and 5 in the morning sometimes and then back up the next day. I mean, you know, that's true love right there of what you do, and it shows in your work. So we appreciate you for it.
Well, if it goes live at 8 a.m., that means he's set up at 7. And then if it ends at 3, he gets to bed at 5:30.
Yeah, we haven't – that's kind of calmed down with the guys taking the big races and pushing them over 2 days. That was the best thing that anybody ever came up. And that was – Britt Cummings came up with that idea, okay? Because he called me when he first started talking about doing the Guaranteed Million, and he goes, no, we're going to do this different. He goes, and we're going to push this over 2 days. And I went, oh, dude, that would be great, you know, because it's like – I mean – let's face it, you have 500 cars and you do, you know, and of course we don't stream time runs anymore, but you do that and you do buybacks. And, you know, when you start the second round, you still have 400 cars. Okay. So, and just do the math, that's 400 minutes and then add 3 or 4 hours in on top of that. So yeah, it's another 11, 12 hours before you're going to be done.
It does become a math exercise at some point.
Well, and I do that. I'm a math guy. And I do that I'll do that. We write down when the round starts, when it ends, and I can pretty close tell you, well, we're going to be done about 11 o'clock tonight. And I'm normally within 30 minutes, one way or the other, unless there's a, you know, an oil down or something crazy happens. But
you probably like working with Beard. Michael seems to find a way to run like 600 cars in 10 hours, start to finish.
That. Yes, at VMP. We did that last year. It was like, oh, my gosh, man. I was amazed that we got it done. I really was.
Yeah. Well, sometimes you just got to keep the flow going, and that takes some work all in itself.
Indeed.
So, and then you got to make sure that the guys get late, that they can, you know, get back up there without taking 30 minutes to, you know, of killing time.
Don't get me started, okay? I won't talk about the last four or five rounds, okay?
It's funny, in the early rounds, I can double, and you can get back up there in 10 minutes and just hot lap your car. But when it gets late, it seems like it takes 30 minutes in between runs to.
Yeah.
Especially with the discussion.
Yeah. Well, of course, you always have to have the discussion, you know, when you get down to that round where we're going to talk about how we're going to slice and dice the pie up. So,
yeah, that was pretty fun. I live streamed that at Vegas for at the last fling race, and that was pretty cool. I just showed them all talking. I didn't get up in it, but it was fun sitting there watching them go back and forth, and every round they had to have those talks. So, got to get the money right.
At the million, at the guaranteed million, where we didn't have the audio on because there was no need to do that, but just the guys talking back and forth and, you know, writing things down and deciding. And that was pretty cool. That's the first time I've ever seen that, because normally I'm in the scaffold. So
yeah. Well, normally I'm not in the split. I'm never anywhere near the split, so I don't get to do it unless I'm working. And then I get to – but I think it's cool to show that backside.
We didn't do that in the old days. We used to have gamblers races instead of buybacks. I'm so old. It's been so long since I raced. We didn't do splits, okay? We didn't split buybacks and stuff. Nobody talked about that stuff back then. You know, if you're racing for $1,000 and runner-up was $500, that's what you got. So, anyway.
I was talking to somebody the other day, and I said my kid's made more passes in five races in his junior than probably the first 2 years or first year I did when I first started bracket racing, because you got two time trials and ran first round, and if you lost, you were done until next week. There was no other place. I mean, there was no buybacks. There was nothing. You just, you know, and then you try the next week, and you were dying to get to the track so you can make, you know, hopefully more than three passes that day. So so you learned something.
Well, we used to do a gamblers race when we were in Lawton. I mean, it was just not unusual. It depended on how late it was and everything else, but we always raced till 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning anyway. So, because you didn't start till 5 or 6. I mean, we didn't even open the gates until 4 because it was so doggone hot. I mean, Ryan, well, you guys, if you're from that part of the country, you understand. You
know,
you don't even show up till 4 o'clock. So, and time trials don't start till 6, and by 8, you know, it's only, you know, 100 degrees instead of 120. So it's like, you know,
of course, it wasn't 400 cars.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, and that's right. It wasn't 400 cars. We'd have 120 to 140 cars between four classes. So
yeah, makes it a little easier to run multiple races.
That split talk, at Memphis was very mild compared to a lot of them.
Yeah,
just for anybody that was wondering, there was a little bit of heatedness in that split talk, but that's very, very mild compared to the last few at Montgomery.
Cool.
Well, Mark, we appreciate you coming on, man, and spending some time talking to us, and Joanne being there in the background with you. And like I said, just really love what you guys do. You're really good at it, and we're just happy to spend some time talking with you today.
Excellent. Well, thank you, guys. I appreciate it. I appreciate the opportunity to kind of go behind the scenes, so to speak, of what we do here at Motor Mania TV. And thank you to all the fans out there, all the sponsors, the supporters, the tracks, and the promoters, because – without you guys, well, we just wouldn't exist.
All right. Thanks. We'll catch you down the road, man.
All right, man. Take care.
I just want everybody to know that the last time I was driving from Augusta, Georgia to Spencer, Indiana, I stopped at a Chick-fil-A and everything. I stopped at the same Chick-fil-A today as we recorded the podcast. I did everything to a T that I did last time, but I got ran into last time, and I made it to the Indiana state line unwrecked.
Well, we're excited.
That's a win in my book.
That's a big win.
Yeah, that's a win in my book. I stopped. Well, I saw the Chick-fil-A sign. I pulled it. I'm like, wow, this place looks familiar. I'm like, oh, I stopped here last time, and then I got wrecked a few hours later. So, yeah. But anyway, no, Mark is very well-spoken, and I had always wanted to interview Mark on a podcast platform, because I know pretty well how he's going to reply to most of it, because he's been there and he's done that. I've Ryan and I spent a lot of time with him. You know, we, especially drag week, was a time that, you know, we were very close quarters for 6 days, 7 days. And, you know, it's, he's a guy that he's not going to sugarcoat it. He's not going to tell you what you want to hear. But, you know, if you need the cold hard, you know, I guess we call that what, the dad advice, Mark's the guy you go to, because he's been in this industry for that long. And he'll tell you, you know, it's this way, or, you know, sorry about you. But he's to see what him and Joanne have created, what they did with so little for so long is incredible. And you would never imagine it. Like, he won't take credit for it. That's why we didn't talk about it earlier. But, like, some of the speed video productions, even 2020, they did, because they did it under contract through J Angel, which is the umbrella company. So they would put out streams through Speed Video, because Speed Video didn't have a truck or stream available. And Mark and Joanne obviously are in the industry of making.
I think we lost him.
Oh, no.
Did you lose him?
Yeah, we lost you. He's muted. Ryan, let's talk about the Oil Patch Nationals.
Yeah, it's our last race at Ardmore for the year. I'll be honest with you, whenever I left, when we recorded last week, I hadn't gone to Ardmore yet. And I was expecting, I don't want to say, I was expecting an okay crowd. When I rolled through the gate Saturday morning for the first day of it, I was blown away. It wasn't windmill numbers by any means, but we end up with 270 cars on nice. Saturday. So,
and that's really good.
150 in Super Pro. Around a little bit over 90 in our foot brake class, and then we had our sportsman class as well. That it was its second highest turnout for our sportsman class. So great weekend. We had to crown us some track champions, which is really cool. Trip West won both top bulb classes, and this can be hard for a lot of people to believe, but Jake Howard won both foot brake classes.
Really? Who's that guy?
Yeah. Yeah. Some guy at the Pontiac.
Fire turn.
This is the first year for our new point system. We went to a 10-round base point system. Every round you stage, you get 10 points. Jake, if you go by that, he staged 62 times in foot brake alone this year.
Nice. Didn't he win Super Pro on Sunday?
Runner-up Super Pro.
Runner-up to Bryce Self.
Yep. On Sunday, Scott Wallace beat Troy Ross in Super Pro. In Noe, it was Jake Howard over Chad Sandlin. Shocker.
Yeah.
Sportsman, it was Corey Lytle over Greg Swift. Greg Swift dialed 14 flat because the transmission was broke, and he tried lifting it down the racetrack. He got it back to the trailer, and it wouldn't even move.
Wow. What did he run in the final?
Like 13 flat.
No, okay.
Something like that. He couldn't.
He did a bad job.
Yeah, he got a check for it. But and then Sunday, Bryce Self beat Jake Howard, who was swapping feet in Super Pro. And then in foot brake, Michael Graves beat Jeremy Falkenbach. And in sportsman, it was Sean Battenfield over our first ever sportsman track champion, Matt Hall. So
you like saying Falkenbach, don't you?
He says it. I have to say it a lot because there's multiple of them, and they go a lot around.
That's top. That is an awesome name to say. That's a top. If I was Big Jed, that is a top five name.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Because it's easy to fuck it up. You know what I mean? Yeah. You say Falkenbach. You know, but it's Falkenbach.
All right, Jake, you're back. You can finish up about Mark and.
I was just saying he's just a wealth of knowledge, not only in the sport but in the industry. And you know, he's went from the Air Force to live streaming videos. So. Just to even sit down and have a conversation with him, which, you know, if you do that at the racetrack, it's probably not going to happen because he's probably going to tell you he's busy. But, you know, just like he's always at PRI. He's always at all the social functions we all go to. And he's just a guy that you want to listen to him talk, just because he's so well spoken and he's as knowledgeable about everything. And, he's just one of those guys that we need around for the sport to be what it is.
Definitely. They definitely make a difference. So, all right, guys, let's wrap it up. What else we got? What's next on the schedule, Ryan?
Currently, I'm done. There is nothing else on the schedule for me to work. It is a definite maybe go race Thanksgiving somewhere. Not real sure. We got a lot of stuff he accomplished in the off season. I just about got practice tree flyers done. They should be released here, if not this week, then the next week. And just really kind of getting ready for next year, getting our schedule ready at Ardmore, getting my travel schedule kind of underway, what all I'm going to be doing. So kind of starting our off-season mode.
Thanksgiving, I'll have like a truck and a trailer with a wagon in it, and you can drive to Piedmont.
Oh, wow.
Oh, well, I mean, I don't want to go, but you're welcome to go. I'll be in Piedmont the week before.
Oh, I'm assuming not with that truck and trailer and wagon.
That's correct, yeah.
Oh, that's unfortunate. I'd be like, we can just swap.
Yeah. Oh.
We had a little engine issue in the junior last weekend, no surprise. Year of 2020 has been the year of not a COVID, but of engine issues for Team Drag Champ. So,
like father, like son.
Easy, easy.
Yeah. So, look, no fault of anybody, but broke the head off an exhaust valve and the lights on the little junior. So we yanked that out, and Austin got to learn how to work on that part of it yesterday, and should have it back together this weekend. And he'll hit that Texas turkey hunt at Houston Raceway Park on Thanksgiving weekend. And then I think might actually run into Mark. There's a no prep race in Houston, I think, the week after. It's going to have juniors. And then there's another no prep race in San Antonio. Mike Murillo's putting on the 14th of December or something like that, somewhere around that time. So looks like we got plenty of juniors on the schedule for the rest of the year for us. So maybe we got a few more races left. That's about all that's on our schedule. Working on getting close to the end of the year. Last week, we shipped out all of our Racer of the Month trophies. Steve Sisko was the July Racer of the Month. Nathan Sexton was the August Racer of the Month. And then G-Dub picked up the September Racer of the Month. So we still got October coming out soon. More trophies to give away. We got a lot of big stuff next year. We're going to work on doing more trophies for more winners from Drag Champ on a monthly basis, and got a lot of cool things coming. End of the year, top 10 lists are coming, so be looking for those. Those are always fun to try to rank all these racers and see how they compare over the course of the year instead of week to week. But
Ryan, so, do you think that we've got like a bunch, everybody has like, you know, if your last name's Sexton, you're always big sexy. Do you think Nathan could be a little sexy, or is that just too much homo for us?
That's probably too much homo for us.
He's a very small individual.
He is a short man.
Real sexy? No, yeah, that's not.
He knows how to wear the return springs out on the carburetor, though, right? He can work the throttle on the top end.
He can do a lot of things.
I don't think it has a carburetor.
Is it fuel injected?
I think it's still fuel injected. Yeah, no,
that's right.
We get embarrassed by a fucking straight legal Mustang.
Yeah.
It's not the car, it's the driver.
It's like a new age Steve Stites.
That's true. That is true. Hey, what about the 600 plus cars at Bowling Green last weekend?
Well,
it's not cars.
Entries.
Come on.
I don't know. I'm asking.
They had a legitimate 400, but if you lose round one, you can buy another tech card. If you lose that one, you can buy another one. If you lose that one, you can buy another one if you want to. Until it ends, like until round one is over, you can keep buying tech cards as long as you're not more than double entered.
And then you can buy back on all those tech cards?
No buybacks.
Oh, no buybacks. Oh, okay.
But you can just keep going.
How long did round one last?
Almost 7 hours. 6 hours and like 40 minutes.
Wow.
No way in hell. Which, I get they made a lot of money off of that, but that's kind of like put a bad taste in a lot of racers' mouths. Like, at that point of it, it's how much money do you have?
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking. I didn't realize that was what was going on. I just saw on the internet everybody kept saying 600 cars or entries, however you want to call it, but I didn't realize they were just...
The real number was like 620-something on Saturday was the biggest number, and then Sunday they only had like 435.
Yeah, people were out of money?
they didn't want to be there all day. They didn't want to buy another tech card.
Wow. Well, drag racing is healthy going into 2021. Yeah. All right, guys, we'll see y'all next week.
Yeah, have a good one.